What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Revived Bots is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Troy and Joel, and you are listening to Revive Thoughts.
It is not in this world they now walk, but in the place Christ went to prepare for his disciples, sometimes called paradise, or, in other words, heaven itself.
Every episode, we bring you a different voice from history in a sermon that they delivered. Today, we're going to the year 1826 to hear a sermon by John Taylor. It was delivered in Boone County, Kentucky. Troy, have you ever been to Boone County, Kentucky?
I don't know what that accent is, Joel. And also, I don't actually know. I don't know if I have. My wife, Elise, is from Kentucky originally, and she and I have been to multiple parts of Kentucky. She's definitely familiar with Boone County, Kentucky, because when I was telling her, hey, I'm doing this guy from Boone County, Kentucky, she totally was like, I know all about that and where exactly where it is and everything.
I don't remember. If I were to have to name a county in Boone, or sorry, in Kentucky, if you said... What's a county in Kentucky? I feel like I'd say Boone County just by definition. Yeah. It sounds like a type of county that would be in Kentucky without even knowing.
Well, you know, Joel, it's funny because as everyone knows, because people, ever since our New Year's Eve episode, people have been playing the party game that is our map, and I don't blame them because it's just super fun for the whole family and all your friends and strangers that you meet. But if you look at the map, we have actually a surprisingly large number of sermons that have come from Kentucky. Like, you'll see, like, there's a lot of sermons from New England. That makes sense. That's where the Puritans are. There are a couple of sermons here and there in other parts of America. But then there's, like, four or, like, there's several that are coming out of Kentucky, which if you had asked me when you're starting Revive Thoughts, like, would you have a significant number of sermons coming from Kentucky? I would have been like, I don't think so. Like, I don't think of Kentucky and think of it as, like, the particularly, you know, sermon-inspired state. No offense to Kentucky. I mean, I'm sure everyone there loves the Lord, but I'm just saying it wasn't my first instinct. But the reason is because that's where a lot of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary people were from. But this is not that. Now, I will say this is just for our, you know, if you're an international listener, you probably don't have a lot of thoughts on Kentucky outside of Kentucky Fried Chicken. But if you're an in the States listener, if you have been in Kentucky, I have one very strong memory of Kentucky, and that is they had this really delicious ginger ale called Ale 8. And I'm a huge fan of it, and I love that stuff. Mm. And whenever if we go through Kentucky, we got to stop and grab a couple of those because it is the best ginger ale. I don't know what it is. It just tastes super good.
I'm not a huge ginger ale fan, but
Neither am I. So. That's the thing. I don't like – if you ask me to drink a drink, I think ginger ale is probably – negative 10 on my way. Like, I don't even think of it as a drink. It sounds like a medicine or something that your parents gave you when your stomach hurt, except for Ale 8. Ale 8 is just super good.
Ale 8. Okay. Well, that's good. Next time I'm rolling through, a sponsor,
although,
by the way.
Joel, there you go. Joel, I do feel like, and I don't, you know, if you're a recent listener, you would know, there's a person named Chubby Baker who would hear these kind of comments, and I feel like this is exactly the kind of thing that would set them off and go, wait a second, nobody cares about your favorite drink in Kentucky.
He wants to talk about John Taylor. Jump right into John Taylor.
Jump in there. But before we do jump fully into John Taylor, and part of the reason I brought up the fact that Elise is from Kentucky too is she, I feel like, was partially the inspiration for this, mostly because I feel like by knowing her and like learning more about Kentucky from her, I felt like I was more interested in these kind of frontiers people who used to live like out when Kentucky was just forests and mountains. Which has made me more interested in those people all over. But I wanted to promote something here. We have a YouTube channel called Revived Thoughts or Revived Studios. You can go find it. And I have been making these little shorts, these just 1-minute videos. They go out. I try to put them up every day. And we would love for you, if you are not already subscribed to our channel, to subscribe and to maybe watch some of those videos, give them a like. It's helped, and hopefully you enjoy them. So far, people have liked them. If you've been on our social media, if you see us on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, or X or Twitter, you'll see that those have been kind of going out already. And we've received a lot of positive feedback from you guys who are watching them. So we really do appreciate that. But if you don't know, or if you're not already subscribed over on YouTube, we would love for you to do that. It does really help. And here are just some comments from some of those short videos. Charles over there on YouTube said, awesome video. Keep up the great work. And Ellen over there said, God's mercy to all of us in response to one of the videos. And we have a lot of other comments, but I want you to know, these videos are going out into YouTube's algorithm, and it's going out to everybody, which means we've also been experiencing a significant uptick in non-Christians who are not exactly thrilled with church history videos as seemingly going into their algorithmic feed. So we get also comments like Brock Barnett here, who said, this is almost entirely untrue, but whatever, which was his comment to how when the Vikings became Christian, they became more peaceful, which is... I mean, it's kind of, it's not like a particularly controversial historical fact. When they had another comment, Joel mentioned that he saw it where just someone just said liar in all caps. So
that was my favorite.
Just liar. Anyway, so I'd love for you to go subscribe and maybe throw us some positive feedback to kind of counteract what I think is just non-Christians who are watching these videos, which great, maybe they're learning more about church history in the process, but they also seem to be maybe not fully invested yet. They don't, you know, they don't seem to maybe know as much as they need to know about it. So yeah, if you could go over there, subscribe, maybe give us some likes, and you hopefully will be able to enjoy those 1 minute videos. And it's just an extra way we want to get some content to you where we can, as we try to constantly be bringing you more church history. And speaking of church history, let's jump into John Taylor's story.
Hold on. I want to talk more about these videos. I think it's okay. Good because people get to figure out what you... in my head, it's a game. They can try to guess what you look like and then go and see what you look like. Because people have heard your voice for so long. Because this is Troy on camera talking to the camera. So, I mean, these questions that I'm sure you have. Does Troy wear glasses? How long is his hair? You know, things that you've always wondered and you have your mind's eye... report in and let us know if he has met your expectations.
Wait, don't do that. I don't know that I want to receive these comments, Joel, of I really expected a just cooler guy running the church history podcast that I listen to.
But talk about it with the friend. Say, what do you imagine this man looking like? And then see if, who's more right.
And it's always fun too, because I have my children. So I usually, if you're not watching these yet, I usually record these on my balcony, but I've had friends of mine from like high school message me and go, are you a roofer now? Because it looks like I'm standing on a roof. It's just the way Indonesia does things. They built a balcony next to their roof, not on the roof, not even connected to the house. It's just a random balcony. And, but you'll see my kids sometimes in the background of these videos too. So they're, it's very random. And when it's not cloudy, you can see a very beautiful, dormant volcano in the background, but lately it's been rainy season, so the volcano has been hidden in most of my videos, but you're still seeing palm trees. And I just like to imagine this is going to be so confusing for these non-Christians as they scroll over, they see like this random guy and they click a video with like all these palm trees and like tropical stuff, and he's sitting there being like, and that's when St. Augustine, and it's got to be just like a very confusing, what have I stumbled into, like what corner of the internet am I at right now?
I think it's production value. We flew you to Indonesia to record these videos.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. It's the big ones.
We have to shout out our Q&A episode coming up too. February 13th, we are going to air a Q&A episode, and we are in the process of collecting questions for them. And you can email us at revivethoughts@gmail.com and put Q&A in your subject line. You can ask us anything you want. And I think I'm going to make a bold claim here. It might bite me in the butt, but I think I'm going to commit to it now because we only have 2 weeks left. I feel pretty good that we're going to answer every single question that comes in. Nothing is going to get cut. So it might be a long episode. Gloss over it. We might bulldoze through a few if we get a lot. But as of now, I think that is a fun and safe claim to make. We're going to answer every single question that comes in. Nothing is going to go unaired. So if you want to be a part of that, email us at revivethoughts@gmail.com. Put Q&A somewhere in the subject line. We will go through those and answer any and all questions that we receive.
All right. So we really hope you'll send those. We've already received some, and we're ready for more because we want to be available. We want you. You know, I'm putting my face on the screen for you guys. That's where we're at now. That's the connection we're here for. So please send us your questions. We'd love to answer them and hear from you. I think it'll be fun. And yeah. All right. Now, with no further ado, John Taylor, the guy you came to hear about, and this funeral sermon for Mr. Absalom Graves.
Yeah, John Taylor preaching a funeral sermon for Mr. Absalom Graves. I like funeral sermons. I think it's one of the more favorite ones that we do on this show. We've done a few.
To hear you say that. Because whenever I do one, I always wonder, I'm like, is this weird? Do people want to hear a funeral sermon for a guy they've never met who lived hundreds of years ago? But I've really gotten, I feel like, a lot from each of them that I've done. So that's why I keep bringing them back.
I like them because I feel like there is something so telling about how humanity interacts with grief and death, like in a way that is so unique. In different eras and different, like, it gives you such a clear cross-section of what the psychology of that society was like in a way that nothing else, you know, really comes close to doing. And so, like, if you really want to understand, like, what people were like, what people's attitudes towards theology and their community and stuff was like in a setting 5,000 years ago, or, you know, whatever it may be, I think a funeral sermon is, like, one of the best ways to really get a good, quick digestible portion of what that society must have been like. I think that's why I like of just kind of that it captures society very well.
Well, and I completely agree with you on that. And it also, I feel like at the end of all these funeral sermons we've done, and they've been a part of the show since, I mean, the very first few sermons, we had those very early on. And I always walk away from it going, man, that must have been a really great person. Like, I would have really liked to have known that person that died. That he or she sounds like they were just a real encouragement to those people. And I look forward, in a sense, you know, in a little sense, of seeing that person in heaven someday. And it just feels like it's a really, it always makes me ask that question too. Like, what will, you know, it be like for me when I die? Well, these kind of things that they're saying about Absalom Graves or these other people we've had on, and just a few lists to name a few of them. Robert Murray McChain had a funeral. We had a funeral sermon for him on a couple months ago. Really great episode, because that's when I learned about Burns and the amazing man that he was. But going back further, we've had Martin Luther's funeral. We've had George Whitefield's funeral. And I just kind of always, you know, ask that question, when I die, these amazing things that these other men are having kind of proclaimed about them, of course they wouldn't proclaim them about me, but what would they say about me, and how am I doing in my walk with God, and am I living in such a way that that funeral sermon could be in any way applicable to me? Does that make sense? Like, I just feel like it's a good check on myself.
Yeah. And so just to clarify, this episode and the sermon that we're hearing is preached by John Taylor, but the person that died is Absalom Graves. So you'll hear those two names, but it's a John Taylor episode. John Taylor, born in Virginia in the year 1752, not receiving the best education in the world. He was taught to read, and he was taught, you know, it says his numbers. So, you know, like kind of the bare basics of counting. Probably not even, you know, any arithmetic. So very basic level of education. And this is partially due to just kind of being out in the boons, dare I say.
Wow, this guy.
Yeah, being out in the middle of nowhere in Virginia during, this is pre-Revolutionary War, moving through the Revolutionary Era in American history, which is I can't even imagine. It must be a very wild pocket of history to live in. And this was his backdrop. Definitely, I think it could classify as him being out in the frontier. He's in the frontier of the American land at this point. And so much so that he has these like accounts. He could talk about locations that he could see from his house. You know, like imagine going out in your front stoop of your house and pointing out at certain hills and kind of reaccounting neighbors that had been killed by Indians that were in the area, you know, or travelers that had come through and were attacked by Indians. So imagine that childhood, and then that kind of juxtaposition to a Revolutionary War and becoming America throughout your lifetime. Like, that is such a wild progression of society. He was raised in, I'd say, like an Anglican household,
I don't want to say the Anglican Church, because he didn't really, this was so far in the frontier that there was no church to go to. In fact, he says he was raised Anglican, but it was this Baptist minister that came through his town and preached when he was 17 years old. So he went through the first 17 years of his life without ever hearing any sermons. This is what he talks about, being the first sermon he ever heard was from this Baptist minister. And it was life-changing for him. He was so incredibly encouraged by it that he really focused hard on getting better at reading it, just specifically to read his Bible. And he began studying the New Testament, and that kind of took him off in this career trajectory. And so 3 years later, by the time he was 20, he joined this Baptist movement to be a frontier preacher. He wanted to do what this man came through his town doing, to be a frontier preacher for the Baptist movement that was in America.
Now, Taylor never seemed to sit still or just stay anywhere very long. Like, when I was looking through his life, it would be like, okay, he moves to this frontier town, helps settle it, helps build the church, helps get it going. And then within a few years, maybe five, maybe he'd get all the way to 10, he's moving to the next frontier town where he's doing that again. And he's founding a new community and he's helping that one get started. And then another 5 years, he's bouncing over to another frontier. So he was just kind of always going further and further out. And as Americans were expanding their borders and going further into Kentucky and, you know, Indiana, Ohio, in that direction, as they were kind of spreading out, once a little bit of an area seemed to get going, he would just join the next batch and go further out. It's just an interesting life. You know, you have some people in this that we cover on the show, like a Charles Spurgeon, who just kind of plant themselves at one church for 50 years and that's where they minister. And then you have people like this who they just don't seem to sit still. They get comfortable and then boom, they move to the next spot. They move to the next spot and they're just kind of moving around. Now, being a Southerner of the United States during this time in the early 1800s, late 1700s, it would not probably surprise you to know this is a time period when slaves are being owned, and he very upfrontly, yeah, he also owned slaves. And I don't want to say this to, like, you know, justify anything or make it seem like it's okay. We here at Revive Thoughts are against slavery, and we think it was not the good thing to do. But it was something that was worth noting, just to kind of add some detail and maybe hopefully help you to get a better light of the way he viewed the situation. As he moved and worked, he kind of worked in these churches and helped them get started. His own slaves often became and were considered members in full standing in those churches. And not all of them, because he did not force them to go to church if they did not want to, but many of them would be participants in the church services. So if that, for whatever that might be worth to you, he seemed to care a lot about the people in that way. And there was another anecdote. This isn't from this time period, but at the end of his life, he was in one of these churches sitting in what was called the gallery. This was kind of a side part of the church where the slaves would be. That's where they would go to church. They would sit over in the gallery while everyone else would kind of sit in the middle. And he was sitting in the gallery this day, and somebody yelled up to him, like, "Hey, you know, what are you doing there, John Taylor? Get over here and sit with the rest of us." And Taylor said, "I am a free man," implying I am free to sit where I want, and I want to sit right here with the slaves. Thank you very much. Again, I don't think that means, oh, okay, so he, you know, has no problems in this area, but it just tells you that, like, beyond the purely just straightforward slavery is wrong, he did seem to have an actual heart for the people that were inside that institution, and he did seem to want to be alongside them in a way that I don't think was true of a lot of the other people that owned slaves at that time. As we said, for a guy not very formally educated, he did write a lot, including he wrote a history of 10 churches, which it told basically the stories of 10 different churches and kind of these pioneer churches in Kentucky. I looked through it. Look, it's not my personal favorite reading to, you know, read the stories of 10 churches in Kentucky, but if that's something you're interested in, then you can go do that. But it was interesting to see just the amount of care and detail and interest. I mean, he really did approach the history of Kentucky's churches like a very detailed historian, telling this story with just very much, almost like kind of the Book of Acts, almost levels of care. Like, I want to get every detail right, every name I can. Like, here's what's going on here. Here's what's going on there. And it was just interesting to see. That's in my time looking at these different people in frontier positions, he's probably one of the first that I feel like was that level of detailed. But he also did something that got him in a lot of trouble, and it was he wrote a missions pamphlet. But it kind of came across not as a missions pamphlet, but it came across as an anti-missions pamphlet.
Yeah, at the time, there were a lot of these mission societies that were asking pioneer churches to give to different mission funds that were outreaches to the Indians and Canadians and other frontier churches. And he wrote this pamphlet basically saying that, you know, the pioneer churches, we're doing the best we can. We're stretched pretty thin here. We don't have a whole lot of extra things that we can give you towards this movement. And this pamphlet, I don't know if saying went viral is an apt description, went viral in 1800s lingo. It was circulated quite predominantly, and there was a large group of people that were championing it as a anti-missions type pamphlet, saying, you know, like, this is a bad thing for society, this is why. And John Taylor's like, no, that is not my intention at all. And he felt terrible because he kind of he wrote something that ended up aiding people that were against missions. And that was not his intent. He was just trying to communicate that maybe there's better ways to do your fundraising than to keep asking these churches that don't really have much extra money to give towards your causes. And so he talks about that a lot, about how he kind of could have handled that better, you know, could have gone about that in maybe a better way, those unintended consequences of hastily writing this pamphlet.
I just was going to jump in. I like that story a lot because as somebody who does social media stuff for our podcast, I do sometimes send a post or a message. And to me, it looks super clear what I'm saying. And then as the comments roll in, look, the comments sometimes are just negative no matter what you do. There are people who can fight over anything on the internet. And we all know that. But there are definitely times where, too, I was like, oh, no, they're getting totally the wrong message. Or sometimes I do something really stupid, which I always remember that I asked on X. I was like, hey, should pastors be required to have a seminary degree? Or just something to see what people were going to say. And, they, you know, people give their opinions. But I had accidentally misspelled seminary. And so it really was like the perfect post. And it was Keith Foskey over at York Calvinist was like, did you do that on purpose? Because if you did, that's like some like high level joking stuff. And I had to be like, nope, I just sent that really fast. And the typo just was stuck in the middle of the post. And it was perfect.
Clearly an uneducated, unseminaried man.
Yeah, that's what it was saying. That's what it was saying.
Okay, around the year 1800 to 1801, he was pastoring a church out in this Boone County, Kentucky, and this is where the Lord started moving, and people started getting saved. His church alone would see 113 people come to know the Lord through his church there, and that was just kind of his church. Other churches in the area were also experiencing this growth, this dare we say, revival? Dare we say, some have attributed it to kind of the early starting points of what's called the Second Great Awakening. And some of the leaders of that Second Great Awakening were people that Taylor himself would be calling out. And I also find this type of stuff fascinating, too, especially in an era before our communications age of the internet and stuff, where information was more readily available. You have these movements, these awakenings, these revivals that get very big and last several years, and people have to figure out if they're a part of it or not. Like, people have to figure out if they're in favor of it or, you know, if there's things, because there's also like bad movements. Like, there is blasphemous movements or heretical movements as well. And so sometimes we have the luxury of this hindsight, being able to look back, but people that are living in the era, sometimes it takes them several years to figure out how they feel about a movement or where they stand in it. And sometimes they're a part of it for a long time and then regret being a part of it later in their life. Sometimes they're not a part of it, but then come around on it by the end of it. So stuff that would never fly today, because today you have to be 100% certain in all your decisions at all times, and that's who you are. But back then, we see a lot more of a change, of an evolution in people's opinions when it comes to these certain types of things. And it makes sense if you put yourself in their shoes where, it always seems clear to me that they want to serve the Lord, want to honor the Lord, and just kind of have their guard up because they're trying to figure out if this is of the Lord or not, and if it's something that they want to promote or if it's something they need to speak out against. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, so I really think this was an interesting one to look. The Second Great Awakening, we mention it here and there. We did an episode on Azahel Nettleton, who I think is just really an awesome guy. I really like him, and I can't, you know, promote him enough, and his episodes were very good. But we haven't really done a whole lot with the Second Great Awakening, and part of that is because the Second Great Awakening goes in some very different directions and ends up kind of just having a lot of different pieces that are moving. Is kind of almost English Civil War-ish in the sense of just like some of these pieces are good and we like them and I don't have a problem with what was going on, and some of them are not. Taylor is a very early part of this, and he ends up going up against a group called the Campbellites, and they were a leading group in this region kind of where he was. They were leading these big camp revivals, and they were saying lots of people were coming to Christ. Now, the Campbellites don't go by that name anymore. Eventually, they became what was called the Restorationists, but this particular group of them was giving a lot of trouble to Taylor, and the Baptists at the time kind of identified, this is what we believe, they believe, this is from their writings and interactions we've seen that they have on them. The first was, they believe that the Campbellites believe that sin was on the outside, not on the inside, so your heart wasn't sinful, just some of your actions are. You don't have to believe in Jesus as the Son of God, you believe he's a historical person. He lived, but you don't have to go deeper than that. Repentance is a change of your mind only. He even said that the Campbellites made fun of the idea that grace could be experienced in your heart. And so Taylor wrote this book called The Campbellites Exposed, kind of early on trying to get an alarm bell ringing here as this Second Great Awakening movement was happening, to say, look, not everything that's happening in this Great Awakening is good. And I don't think they even really were calling it the Great Awakening yet. That name, I think, kind of came later. What's interesting to me, too, though, is the original Great Awakening had some of this going on, too. We remember it, for the most part, as all the good that was happening. But there were some of these kind of issues happening then at the same time as well. But I do feel like we see a lot more split and division. I mean, we've had people message or tell us straight up, there is no such thing as the Second Great Awakening. Every part of it was bad. And I don't agree. There seems to be lots of great men like John Taylor and Azahel Nettleton that are doing just good things for the Lord. But it's also important to note that there were some problems within these movements and things that I think were not good. And all of those things that we mentioned the Campbellites believe, we would say, no, sin is on your inside, sin in your heart. Jesus is the Son of God. Repentance is a genuine change in your entire life that is gonna not just a changing of your mind. And that grace, experiencing the Lord, is an important part of your walk with God. It's not just something that you're flippant about. And if those were some of the beliefs of the Campbellites, like John Taylor was saying, then he was completely right to call that out.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Taylor would end up dying in 1833. It's the same year that there was this big cholera outbreak. And so I think it is a safe and logical assumption to correlate the two, that he might have been victim to this cholera outbreak that swept through his region. But before he died, he would write this hymn book, Graves Hymns, and out of which there's some that you might be familiar with, one called My Brother, Do You Know the Savior? That's a song that eventually would get renamed Honey in the Rock.
My wife, again, she was like, I know that song. Everyone, what are you talking about? Everyone knows that song. I was like, does everyone know that song? So as you're writing in your questions for this, you know, February, the Q&A, you can also write in and tell us, did you know about Honey in the Rock, or as it was called before, Oh My Brother, Do You Know the Savior?
Yeah, another songwriter to add to the collection of Revive Thought speakers. They correlate more than not as being creative, artistic songwriters. Should we talk about Absalom Graves, the person who died that set up the sermon?
You might help you out here. So for starters, and this is an aside, but Absalom Graves, why would you name your child Absalom? Like, if you've ever picked up the Bible, Absalom's not a good guy. And there's certain names like that come back that people
it is a pretty name.
You know,
I do like the name.
if you didn't know who Absalom was, it's a cool name, but he's a bad guy. Like, he is not a guy you should be naming your child after. It's, but you know what's crazy to me, too, is, like, in the book of Acts, Saul is called Saul, and I know, before he's Paul, and I know that the name Saul has a different meaning, but I just feel like the first Saul should have ruined the name. You know, it's just, like, we don't call people Adolf anymore because, you know, there was an Adolf who kind of ruined the name for it, right? And I just feel like the same way with the Sauls and the Absaloms. I feel like maybe... If you're listening and your name is Absalom, I'm sorry. I do apologize if I've been ripping your name. You might be a really great guy, but the one you're based off of is, he was a rough guy. Okay, that was unrelated. Absalom Graves seems like a knight. You know what? Maybe Absalom Graves can redeem the name for us and get it back for us. He was a smart man. He became a Christian while he was pursuing, from what it seems, intellectual pursuits. Like, he was a guy who was reading a lot of books, wanting to know more about the world, and he seemed to, through that process, he became interested in wanting to know the answers to the world, and that brought him to Christianity, which already kind of makes Absalom Graves a little different than a lot of people. And eventually, somehow, he kind of made his way out to the frontier, and he eventually would pastor the church that John Taylor ran. However, he was a congregant there first for years. He was there when they had their revival where 100 and something people got saved way out there in the frontier area where there aren't even that many people living there. And he eventually would be, after being a congregant there for a very long time, he would become the pastor that takes over the church when John Taylor eventually moves on because he can't stay anywhere for too long. He was known as a passionate pastor who was constantly pushing the cause of foreign missions. That's Absalom Graves. He loved the idea of sending people from their frontier church out into the world to share the gospel, and he preached on it regularly. I don't know that they ever actually did, but at least as an idea, it was really important to him, and they always were giving money to the cause of foreign missions if they couldn't actually do it. He was considered, in fact, according to this old Baptist history book about Kentucky, he might have been the first person in Kentucky to preach on the idea of foreign missions. So that's how near and dear it was to Absalom Graves' heart. He died in the year 1826, and the fact that Taylor was one of the two men selected to preach a funeral sermon for him definitely tells us back earlier when Taylor was kind of seen as anti-missions at one point, they probably wouldn't have picked him if he was anti-missions. Like, these guys must have had similar ways of viewing the world for them to have gone back and have gotten his old pastor. There is so much more to these men and the stories of all these kinds of men that lived out in these Appalachian mountains, lived out in these places like Boone County, Kentucky, or who moved out to places like Ohio, Indiana. As they go further into the world, they eventually get to Missouri and Kansas or Texas. All these places I think about, there's just all these men and all these stories of people who were just preaching to small groups, probably living through some challenging times, probably seeing some great works of God. But as it is, we just don't know most of their stories. They're lost to time to us because history did not collect them or save them or keep them for us to know them. Or they didn't even write them down, maybe, because who they would have written it down for anyway. And yet, all of these little forgotten stories are not forgotten by God. And I just love that all of these churches that the world would have overlooked, the Lord was watching and taking care of so many pastors whose names won't go down in the history books. But it is nice, those once in a while moments when we get a man like John Taylor and we can get a glimpse, just a little bit of a glimpse into what their lives would have been like. Now we can enjoy the funeral sermon of Absalom Graves.
Text that I named was in Isaiah 57, verses 1 through 2. The righteous perish, and no man lays it to heart, and merciful men are taken away. None considers that the righteous is taken away from the evil to come. He will enter into peace. They will rest in their beds, each one walking in his uprightness. By the righteous perishing, I understood their death, and as other men, their bodies decayed into their mother dust. By no man lays it to heart, I understood that the value of the righteous on the earth was not appreciated as it ought to be. For they were the salt of the earth, the lights of the world. Matthew 5:13-14. And as salt and light were valuable articles among men, so were the righteous in this dark world. By merciful men being taken from the earth. They were called off by death. And that none was truly merciful among men but the righteous, that their tender feelings towards their poor fellow sinners would imitate their divine master, who died for poor sinners. And by that circumstance, they were known to be righteous. They were taken away from the evil to come, that this is a world of evils or troubles, always here and always coming, with sorrow upon sorrow. But from them all, the good man was taken away forever. They will enter into peace the day the soul leaves the body, it enters into heaven. That it does not die with the body, neither does it sleep. They will rest in their beds, their graves, the peaceable resting place for the body, where the servant is free from his master, and the oppressor's voice is no more heard, where kings and slaves are on a perfect equality. And though they rest in their beds, each is walking in his own uprightness. It is not in this world they now walk, but in the place Christ went to prepare for his disciples, sometimes called paradise, or, in other words, heaven itself. That departed spirits can speak, we do not doubt, for the souls of them who were beheaded do inquire under the altar, how long? And was kindly answered by the angels in Revelation 6, 9 through 11. Moses and Elijah did converse with Christ on the mount concerning his sufferings, which he was to accomplish at Jerusalem, Luke 9, 30 through 31. We know to a certainty that departed spirits do converse in hell and cry for mercy, as seen in Luke 16, 23 to 24. A departed spirit can lose nothing of its rationality or sensibility in the world to come, but grows in both. For then, says Paul, we will see face to face and know as we are known. 1 Corinthians 13, 12. We have seen recently four wonderful followers of God that have passed on. I've had to do multiple funerals of those whom we love and care about. And Absalom here is the latest. These righteous are perishing, but going ahead of us now, so that they will not have to see the evil of this day. I do not have any doubts at all that they are now enjoying the evening in heaven together, that they know each other better than they ever did when they met together to worship at Bulletsburg with us. And at this moment, maybe they are joyfully recounting all the troubles through which they came to get to that great place. Graves has only left his painful house of clay about 24 hours ago, but quick as it happened, I'm sure some kind ministering spirit, as in the case of Lazarus in Luke 16:22, will bear him away and announce his arrival at heaven's gate, while the Savior said, "Enter into rest, my hard-working servant." The Lord Jesus is as kind and sympathizing now as when he was on earth, as he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Hebrews 13:8. His disciples once returned from a laborious tour of preaching, and the throng was so great they had no leisure to eat bread. So he then directed to withdraw into the desert and rest a while, Mark 6, 7, and 12. So when their labor of love is done on earth, he calls them to heaven to rest forever. I do not know how the rewards and punishments of heaven and hell work. I do not know what they look like, nor what they mean to us exactly. But I do know that our deeds on earth will determine the kind of rewards and punishments that we get in the next life. The Lord told Zechariah 11:8 that he had or would cut off 3 shepherds in 1 month. And for us, we have seen 3 shepherds or preachers the Lord has cut off from Bulletsburg in a month or two. With those in Zechariah, God had a controversy and cut them off for their wickedness. Zechariah 11:15-16. But I cannot think that this is the case for the Bulletsburg shepherds. That it is a trial and scourge on the church for us during this time, I have no doubt. For God's rod does not move without cause. So let each one examine closely. Why is it we are being chastised these days? Perhaps duty to the preachers in some way was neglected. Either in not reasonably communicating to them, or in failing to pray for their prosperity, or neglecting their ministry in some way. I know these are hard thoughts during an already troubling time, but I think it is also important we ask these questions, because maybe the Lord is teaching us something.
As I said, whenever you listen to these funeral sermons, you may never have known the people, but hopefully you do feel a little bit of a connection to them. And I do hope that in your own life, where are you at? And if you were to die tomorrow, it's a sad thought, but we all will die at some point. What would that funeral look like for you? And would these, you know, would people be able to say some of the kind things that were said at Absalom Graves's funeral? Would they be able to commit with such confidence that you are a believer that they will see again in heaven? Would they even know that you're a believer that they will see again in heaven? Those are the kinds of things that would need to be questioned. Hopefully nobody gets to your funeral and finds out for the first time that you're a Christian and loved God and went to church, right? Hopefully it's something that's very evident in your life, just like it was in the life of Absalom Graves.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Revived Thoughts. Today's sermon was narrated by Justin Scott Ray. Big thanks to Justin for helping us get this episode of Revived Thoughts out.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. It has been a long time. He's actually read sermons for us before, and we've kind of asked Justin at different times throughout the years when we had someone from the South. He has a Southern accent himself, being a person who lives in the South. And so it was always nice when we could kind of have him match the accents. He hasn't been able to do one for us for a while, and it's partially because I just hadn't asked him to do one for us in a while. His life had been busy, but he graciously reached out and did this sermon for us, and I really appreciate that, and it's good to have him back on. We ask you what we asked you at the beginning of this episode. If you forgot, go over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel. Give some of those shorts of you when you can. They're short. They're only about a minute long. And give those a like. I'm working on making them better. So if you have any suggestions, you can tell me how to make those kind of videos better. I'm still new at it. It's not something I'm a pro at. But hopefully there's some extra little, you know, just a few extra minutes of church history from us you can enjoy every week. And as we're getting hit by the atheists, every extra comment and like helps us out, so that would be appreciated too. This is Troy and Joel, and this is Revive Thoughts.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.